members
of Parliament and Mr. Van Sieren, I declare this meeting open. We have a number of apologies from the members. Shelley is writing, Honorable Nyekemba is going to see the doctor, Honorable Bainame is in hospital, and also Honorable Ranzolase is in hospital for quite some time now. And the other two members, Madisha and Albert, told they're in other committees. So these are the only members that are available today. We have Mr. Vic van Vieren, who is the director of International Labour Organization here in South Africa, Pretoria. He is going to just take us through about the importance of the organization in the country and what is that they are doing as ILO in the country. Mr. Van Sieren, you are welcome by this committee, and we appreciate your presence, and we are definitely going to learn more about the ILO in South Africa. And thank you for coming, for accepting our invitation, and over to you.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you for the invite, and hopefully everyone's got the two documents that I handed out. One is a PowerPoint presentation, and the other is just the ILO in South Africa. I'm going to be referring to the slides first, just to take you through and give you a broad overview of the International Labour Organization. It was started in 1918, I'm referring to the second slide, and it's the first specialized unit of the United Nations, which was established in 1946. But what's significant about the International Labour Organization as opposed to the other agencies is that it's the only tripartite UN agency. So in Geneva, where our head office is, you'll find that the middle benches are filled by government, and on either side of them is the union, the workers and the employers. And that is the decision-making body of the International Labour Organization. We have a dual role. On the first side, we almost act like a policeman. During the apartheid years, there was South Africa bore the focus of the ILO in terms of its racist policies. And the ILO had a lot of committees, which Jay Naidu and Helton Cheadle used to go to, and a lot of background work and research work was done into how to bring about democracy in South Africa, because we contravened many of the conventions by the policies that were then on the law books in the apartheid era. More currently, Zimbabwe and Swaziland are on the spotlight. I've just returned from a very sensitive mission to Swaziland. The issue there is the contravention of Conventions 87 and 98, which is the freedom of association, collective bargaining. Trade unions are restricted in their activities. It also borders on the banning of political parties, the fact that they don't have political parties. And so we had a mission there. Zimbabwe, we've been coming and going for the last few years. We have agreements. We tend to get headway, and then they go a few steps backwards again. So that's the policeman role that we play. But on the more pleasant side, we play a big role in the developmental side of things. And I'll be touching on some of the examples of the projects that we run in the different countries, particularly in South Africa. In the ILO, our head office is in Geneva. We have an office in Africa. I'm referring to slide 3, where my head office in Africa would be in Addis Ababa, and is headed up by a gentleman from Benin, Mr. Charles Dan. We also have a link to the United Nations, and in each country, like in South Africa, I link into what's called the United Nations country team, where I'm one of the agency heads together with all the other UN structures. The ILO, going to slide 4, we have a governing body and the conference, of which many of you have attended, which happens in June, and in each meeting in June there are 4 themes that are dealt with. There's also various committees, LILS, which is a standards committee, employment relations, finance, technical cooperation, those are the various committees that meet in Geneva and are populated by people from the different countries. The next slide is the fifth one, which is the ILO core conventions. I just list the core conventions which all countries are expected to ratify, and in South Africa, we've ratified all the core conventions, which is extremely important. And that forms the basis of the law, of our labor law thereafter. The ILO mandate at the moment, and the next slide is slide six, we have the ILO Declaration on Fundamental Principles and Rights at Work, Freedom of Association, Elimination of Child Labor, the effective abolition of the elimination of discrimination. I'm just skipping through that slide. The next one is the Declaration on Social Justice for Fair Globalization. These are the mandates that I carry in Pretoria, where I go into a country and I say, what are the comparisons that I need to do? And so I look at, we look at the labor laws and compare them with these declarations of the ILO. Do we promote employment? Do we develop and enhance measures of social protection? I might just stop on that social protection one because I haven't got a point later on that speaks to this. In South Africa, this is a serious issue, this whole area of social protection. It is one of the key priorities of the Decent Work Country Program. But prior to joining the ILO in my current job, I was part of the Employer Caucus. I was part of Business Unity South Africa. And for the last 5 years, we've had the debate in South Africa about retirement fund reform and social development reform. And that debate has just got stuck in government. We've had debates at NEDLAC, even in my ILO life now for the last year and a bit. Social protection and retirement fund reform is, it appears that there's a sticking between Treasury and social development where the two sides of government can't seem to get consensus. We've attended workshops, we've had ILO experts come out and speak to this issue of social protection and retirement fund reform, but it hasn't come back to NEDLAC, and not coming back to NEDLAC and coming back to this committee means that we are lagging behind in terms of finalizing many key issues that can help the people in South Africa. The next slide is the mandate in Pretoria. I work according to a decent work agenda. And what happens is in each country, we go in and we negotiate a decent work country program. And South Africa's one was signed on the 29th of September this year, so it's brand new. And that document then sets out the agenda of how we work going forward. There are four priority themes in the South African Decent Work Country Program. The one is employment creation, which fits in with the new growth path. The second one is governance and looking at labor inspection, strengthening the whole labor inspection so that we can start tackling the issues of non-compliance with minimum wages, as an example. The third one is HIV/AIDS, and the fourth one is social protection. We also have the Global Jobs Pact, which links into employment creation with Minister Abraham Patel and Minister Mdladlana, now no longer Minister of Labour, but with their departments we've been working very closely on how we can look at employment creation. On that point, I just want to stop because in the other document I touch on programs we've got, but what's in the pipeline at the moment is quite exciting. We have an initiative where we're looking at a construction industry program on green jobs, where we think we can create a huge amount of jobs in the construction sector, and we're busy talking to the ministries on that. We also have an initiative to look at saving the textile industry and creating jobs within the textile industry. We've met with the employers, the workers, and with the minister, and we are now looking at putting a program into place of how that we can look to saving jobs and creating jobs in the textile industry. The ILO, how do we function? The next slide, ILO Pretoria, we cover 15 countries. We don't only deal with South Africa, we deal with East and Southern Africa. So it's quite a huge thing, from Seychelles, Mauritius, Ethiopia, down the eastern seaboard, Uganda, Tanzania, down to Mozambique, Zimbabwe, Malawi, Zambia, and then the five SACU countries here. We have we operate on decent work country programs as our mandate. In each country, we've got such a document. We've got 80 staff, more or less, and we have three areas. We have an operations area, we have a specialist area, and a technical cooperation area. Practicalities, I've mentioned Swaziland, I've mentioned the textile industry, Zimbabwe, decent work country programs, labor brokers is another big one that's come in and out of this committee. We have got a convention on employment services, and we are advising the Ministry of Labor on the labour broker situation in terms of world best practice. We've done some research, we've presented some papers, and hopefully that's going to inform the debate. One of our concerns was the public service strike and the definition of essential services, which is more recent, and we certainly feel we can play a role in assisting there. I do believe that it was a lose-lose situation, that last strike, and that there were no winners that came out of that. The Committee on Freedom of Association is where complaints are raised. South Africa is not a country that has any complaints against them on the Committee of Freedom of Association, which is very positive. But Botswana, Swaziland, Zimbabwe are the countries around this area who have been on that committee in the recent past. It's a complaints committee where people lay complaints for malpractices. I'd like to then talk to the document, which is very specific. In this document, I've set out the programs that we are currently busy with. I mentioned the Decent Work Country Program, which we signed on the 29th of September, and in NEDLAC there's a steering committee, which is headed up by the social partners, that manages the implementation of that Decent Work Country Program. We've got an expanded public works program to the tune of almost $10 million, which is operating in the mostly in Limpopo, down in the Eastern Cape and in KwaZulu-Natal, and we are now hoping to expand that to the other provinces. In Limpopo alone, we created 140,000 work opportunities during the last 2 years. The labor inspection project, we are busy training labor inspectors, and we're helping the Department of Labor redesign their labor inspection unit. We have a concern that the labor inspectors are not reaching the far, reaching the real non-compliance areas of South Africa in different industries. Coming from the employer side, I think there's two kinds of employers in South Africa. There's those that comply and who are continually crying that the laws are too stringent, and there's those that fly below the radar screen, and there's many of them that are not complying with our labor laws. The labor inspectorate in its current form is not able to track down and prosecute those that are not conforming. And so there's a huge incentive at the moment for people just not to comply with labor laws, particularly with the decent work agenda. And by doing so, really doing an injustice to the concept of a decent employment arena. The labor inspectorate, we believe, needs to be strengthened far more than it is now. Almost like the tax regime a few years ago for non-conformance with tax, by improving that area, suddenly our taxes and the tax budget increased phenomenally just by taking to task the non-compliance people. If we do the same in this arena, we'll find that the compliance to our labor laws will escalate phenomenally. So somehow we need to get to grips with that one. The Gender Equity Equality Project, we've got one which is looking at the increasing of women in the entrepreneurs arena. We've in fact got two projects. One is looking at the legal side of the do we comply with the gender laws or gender conventions. We've got one for social entrepreneurship targeting unemployment youth. Here in the Western Cape, we had an extremely successful social employment project where one example was a woman from Khayelitsha who won one of the awards that we gave out, went into glass recycling. She got funding for a furnace and now is looking at a provision of glass products back into Khayelitsha Guguletu area, which is her market. That's just one example of an individual that benefited. The Flemish government are one of the biggest funders of our projects, as you'll see in the project on social entrepreneurship. We have a Women Entrepreneurship Development and Gender Equality. It's known as WEDGE. That is where we're looking at promoting women entrepreneurship. I've mentioned the best activities, the Expanded Public Works Program, technical and capacity building towards strengthening labor inspection, I've mentioned. We have looking at strengthening trade union engagement with the national regulatory framework, which was South Africa's response to the global economic crisis. And we've got a child labor project. This is quite a big project looking at, particularly in the agricultural area and areas that are susceptible to the employment of child labor. We work with various ministries, mostly with Minister of Labor, and we look forward to meeting and working with the new minister. Also social development and economic development, public works, higher education, and Stats SA. Ratification of conventions, we are looking to get South Africa to, or encourage South Africa to ratify some of the labor inspection conventions, which haven't been ratified yet. We're working with the Department of Labor in that regard. Social dialogue and tripartism, we work very closely with NEDLAC. In fact, NEDLAC in the ILO is seen as one of the prime examples of best practice in the world. The Director General of the ILO has two areas that they look to, and the one is NEDLAC and the other is the CCMA. I know that the CCMA has gone through some difficult times of late, but the model that is there is used by the ILO throughout the world as best practice together with the NEDLAC model. What is unique about the NEDLAC model, we have the only decent work country program in the world that has been signed by four partners instead of three. That is the workers, the employers and government, which is the traditional three, but also civil society as the fourth leg in NEDLAC have also signed the decent work country program, which is extremely positive. The key figures, social dialogue and tripartism, key figures in the workers' organization, labor representatives in NEDLAC include the Congress, of, which is COSATU, FIDUSA, and NACTU. I'm not sure that we see them merging in the future and the near future. It is likely in most countries we have more than one trade union federation represented at the macro level. In fact, we also have more than one business organization that in most countries represented. In South Africa, we only have BUSA, although there's often the cracks in the BUSA makeup that there might be breakaways that also want to be represented at NEDLAC. That hasn't happened yet. The key figures in the community constituency are listed there. What is difficult in the community constituency is to identify who represents the community in NEDLAC, because there are so many different community organizations. But until now, they have been able to find a good caucus and are well represented. In South Africa, the UN, I'm a bit critical of the UN functioning. I don't think the UN activities are well coordinated. It's a challenge which the new resident coordinator, Mr. Zacharias from Mozambique, is charged with, and we hopefully will get that right in the future. The alignment of the South African Decent Work Country Program, I've just taken the outcomes just to give an example. If you look at the government outcome, a long and healthy life for all South Africans, government outcome 2, you'll see how the Decent Work Country Program aligns itself with that. And likewise, government outcome 4, decent employment through inclusive growth. I've listed the priorities there. And government outcome 5. Madam Chair, this is a quick overview of the ILO and its activities. But I think what we would like to establish and be available to is to this august body of the Portfolio Committee, where we can play a research role for you. We can provide international best practice. We can be a resource to this committee. We sit with 14 experts from all over the world based in Pretoria in different disciplines, from economists to lawyers to child labor to you name it. They sit in Pretoria. We can, at short notice, provide you with information. We can also do presentations on specific projects if you feel there's a need to know more about a specific project. We can also take advice if you feel there are areas that aren't being addressed, that we can go to donors and also make recommendations on new projects. We've just concluded two deals which are going to have a big impact. The one is on productivity in the port of Durban, where the Flemish government are going to be funding a $1 million project in the port of Durban on how to increase the productivity. It's a program together with the trade unions and management, and we'll be doing the project management. But the big coup that we've had is a 6 million euro project, which could increase to 9 million euros for enterprise development in the Free State province with the Premier of the Free State. The intention is that this kicks off in January, that we'll be working with the small business components, with the local community, with the view to increasing enterprises in the Free State at the small business level, thus creating jobs and sustainability. Lastly, and maybe it's just an example of some of the potential that we have out there, and I'll take an example that's very close to home. If one's looking at creating jobs, one of the areas that we've lost an opportunity, for example, is the lottery. Some years ago, and I come from the Western Cape, we developed a model for small business and set up, for example, a kiosk in Melkbosstrand. And we did our homework in determining how can a kiosk create jobs and be sustainable for a family in South Africa. And we said, right, set up a lottery machine, set up an electricity machine, create a little kiosk in a center which, with its overheads, were very low. The lottery and the electricity bodies would provide the machinery and the training, and we ran a trial project, and that little kiosk generated an income of between 3 and 5,000 rand profit every month. We wanted the lottery to multiply this through the country. Can you imagine if we were able to multiply a kiosk concept in terms of job creation throughout the whole of South Africa? It has massive, massive implications for job creation. Thousands and thousands of people. But what has happened is the lottery gives all the licenses to Pick and Pay, to Sasol Garages, no disrespect to them. But what you have is all the little kiosk concepts which we created are just killed overnight. With a little bit of foresight, we could have said to those big chains, they don't need to have a lottery machine to succeed. But by creating a kiosk, simple concept like that, and we have many similar ideas within the ILO to create thousands of jobs. My last issue that I wish to raise is that I do believe, and I come from the employer ranks, that we've lost the plot in terms of the business ethics that we're complying with. I do believe that the world of work and employers can play a far stronger role in not retrenching workers before they actually put workers into the street, and thus retaining people in employment far longer. And I'll give another last example. During the year 2000, or leading up to the year 2000, we had these massive Y2K projects. And in the corporate that I was involved in, where I was a director, there was millions of rands spent on a crisis that was looming. Are your systems going to be able to kick over from 99 to 2000? Are your lifts in your building going to work? And so we could go through to the aeroplanes in the sky, you know, their systems. And so there was a huge panic. And in about 1996, 97, these committees and consultants were put together at huge expense. And the intention was to make sure we were 2000 compliant. And it happened that we were. But when I quantify the money that was spent by large corporates because it became a necessity to become Y2K compliant, it was huge amounts of money in order to secure the success of that. However, when we start dealing with people and we start looking at the well-being of our society, very little effort is made to retain the services of employees. And even if we take a small percentage of the money that was spent on a Y2K project, we could be more creative and find and keep employment for far more people, thus making a dent in our high unemployment rates of 26-27% in the narrow definition. Point I'm raising, at the ILO, we think that we can be a catalyst to more creative thinking, and we will be working closely with the ministries to put these ideas in, because we do believe unless we start doing that, we're not going to make a dent on employment creation. In the textile sector, they try to be creative and looked at providing capital, lending money to the employers, only to find that it was put into non-labor intensive machinery, and we found there was a reduction of jobs. It had the exact opposite effect. So we need to be sensitive, and in South Africa, it cannot be business as usual. Our high unemployment and poverty rates are not sustainable in terms of people just accepting that as their lot for the future. Madam Chair, sorry, I'm going on a mission on some of the issues that we feel very strongly and very passionate about, but we do believe we can add value to your committee and to the other ministries. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Van Vieren, and thank you for this information and input to the committee. Members, can we engage on the issues that have been put in front of us? Honorable Ollis.
Thank you, Chairperson. Mr. Van Vieren, you've made some very interesting points. I wanted to just ask you perhaps to summarize that end bit for me in sort of the following way. What would you suggest are two or three of the key factors in the South African economy that prevent us generating large numbers of new jobs You started to talk about that, and it relates to the ILO's proposals, but it also relates to your own understanding of South Africa working here. We do have a unique country. We do have a unique set of benefits and also challenges and difficulties. So I found that quite interesting. Perhaps you have some suggestions.
Yes, just take some few questions. Honorable Longonyan.
Chair and honorable members, Mr. thank you very much. Good morning. I think, first of all, Chair, to thank Mr. Van Vieren for the presentation. And then I think, secondly, my clarity is that the ILO in South Africa as a structure, is there any other business entity that is international in a way that in South Africa that they collaborate? And I'm actually raising this issue because you know that there are labor organizations like COSATU you have mentioned, but there are also business entities like BUSA you have mentioned. It is in that context that I'm asking this question. The second one is I see the programs. I'm very, very, very actually excited about hearing about these programs. My question would be, in the 9 provinces in the country that we have, particularly the rural ones, the needy and the poor, are these programs spread to reach those? I would, if you've got the data now, to share it, but if you don't have it now, if you can just share with the committee and then send it to the secretariat, I will appreciate it. That is all for now, Chair.
I would also want to ask how do you, for instance, you have people, the number of people who are unemployed, and you can assist. You have mentioned an example of KZN and some group in Khayelitsha, Guguletu. How do they approach you? That's all for me.
If I can start with Honourable Member Hollis, your questions regarding the what is it that we need to do. I think the first area that we need to look at is our youth development and creating employment space for them. But let's get some practical examples of what some countries have done. Botswana, for example, went and said, I've got 3,000 graduates who are unemployed. And they said, all right, for 1 year, we're going to provide you with a mentorship scheme. And Botswana, as we know, is a small country of just under 2 million people. And the government then funded on a youth wage mentorship program, 3,000 graduates, and they had them placed into private sector, into the government, but they identified space for them. After 1 year, what you had was a number of people who are now skilled in getting some real practical experience in the world of work, but the retention of those 3,000, they had a 20% uptake of full-time employment for at least 20% of the 3,000. So that in itself was a success, but the problem for them now is where do they go beyond the first year? Do they continue with this kind of sponsorship? In the South African context, I believe it's not a tall order. If we go tomorrow and we pull the captains of industry together through BUSA or through Business Leadership SA, whatever body we want to identify, and we say that we've got so many matriculants going into the job market, 2010, and we say, fine, so many are going to go to university, so many are going to colleges, but there's a whole group of people who don't have anywhere to go. If we are able to provide an opportunity for them, either through a wage subsidy or a mentorship program, you will find that we'll be able to place every single matriculant for at least 6 months to 1 year, without much difficulty, that the market out there, corporates can play their role in taking people in. If we get, we've got labor centers where youth can go and register. The Department of Labor's got a labor center in each province. If those youth who don't have an opportunity go and register there, and we have businesses identified who can take them in, and I'll come back to my Melkbos coffee shop kind of example. If you go to Melkbos front, you'll find a little coffee shop called Artie Deli. Manager there,
will take in a student and teach that person how to manage a coffee shop, but they can't afford to at the moment. They can't afford to carry that extra person. If there's a subsidy or a mentorship program, there will be hundreds and thousands of people who do exactly the same. If you go to the Chambers of Commerce, their members will all take the youth in, but it needs to be a structured program. And I'm saying for the next 5 years, if we have a program like that, that every single matriculant that comes out of school that doesn't have an opportunity can get at least 1 year's work-life experience through a mentorship program, you're going to create a total new entrepreneurship culture, and you're going to take the people off the streets and take out the hopelessness that is currently amongst the youth. That's one example which I think is quite easily doable by bringing the parties together and negotiating that. The other one is the whole debate about the youth minimum wages. It links into that. We've got people who are just unemployed because companies say it's too expensive. We need to conclude that debate on minimum wages, where the unions are comfortable with it and how it's going to be implemented. The other one is expanded public works programs. The one in Limpopo, where we created 140,000 work opportunities, is one of the few that is functional in the country. We need to get expanded public works programs functioning in all of the provinces where the community people are working and paying back into the community. The one we've got in Limpopo, we've got people who are laying roads into the community where there's no roads at the moment. Those people that are doing the work are, number one, learning project management. Number two, they're learning to do paving. Number three, we're actually producing the bricks and the cement for the curbing. And they've got a little factory set up going there. All of that being done by the community in terms of labor-intensive work. There are many consultants out there that are putting these proposals on the table, but they aren't being looked at and they're not being implemented. And so expanded public works programs have a huge impetus to take semi-skilled and unskilled people out of the unemployment arena into the job arena. The green jobs area, now in the construction sector, we're putting a proposal on the table in green jobs where we, Minister Patel has accepted our proposal, where we believe we can go into the construction sector and take away many of the mechanistic developments that are going on and replacing it with labor-intensive mechanisms. There have to be certain guarantees in place. But I think most of all, I come back to my example of the lottery. Without much difficulty, if we approach people in the huge government institutions, the tender processes and procurement, we can increase our employment by focusing in the areas of labor-intensive employment. It's too easy in government and the private sectors to put tenders out there and carry on business as usual. These are just some examples, I believe, that we can explore. The Honourable Member Nkonyani, the ILO in South Africa, are the other international entities, not in the area of the International Labour Organization. What we do is we work with KASATU, FIDUSA, and NACTU as a constituent. We work with business, and we work with government, and sometimes we work with all three together. So we are working at the macro level. We don't go down to the grassroots levels unless it's a specific project. So we're not aware. There are other bodies like the IMF, the World Bank, but they're not so labor-friendly. They put down areas, and there's often a dispute between the ILO and the World Bank because of the fact that we want decent work agenda to be brought into any loans that are given. The World Bank looks more at maximizing profits and that kind of business approach. The programs in the rural areas. The program that we're running in Limpopo is funded by the Limpopo government. What we do as the ILO is we bring in international experts from throughout the world. We've got 8 engineers from Ghana, got one from Burma. They come in where we lack the skills of project management on expanded public works programs. And so government in this case funds 6 million or 9 million US dollars. We bring in the experts. We've got one down in Bishu, one in Pietermaritzburg, and we are then managing the projects within that. That Limpopo one is a unique one, and what we want government to do is to roll out similar programs in each of the 9 provinces. But that means that the local government will have to budget for that, just like the Limpopo government has done. But by doing that, we created 140,000 work opportunities just in Limpopo, building of roads with the bricks, the paving, and the things going into the community. So can you imagine if we did that in each of the provinces, we could multiply that.
We are ready to move on that, but the trouble is now I've got to go to each of the 9 provinces, show them the Limpopo success, and see if they can do the same. And that takes quite a bit of time. The unemployment, Madam Chair, in the example in Khayelitsha, so that was the, I'm trying to remind myself, I didn't get my notes properly, KZN and Khayelitsha, was that the what we've got there is we've got a pilot project in the world called social employment, and we believe that one of the areas we can create employment is where we go to communities and we teach them to provide services back into the community. And so Khayelitsha was the Western Cape was one of the pilot project areas, and so we went in with a business lending agency and we identified people, entrepreneurs within the community, in this case in Khayelitsha. And we then asked them to come forward with their proposals. And when they came forward with their proposals, we then polished it, linked it up to financing, and we then monitored the process of them. But the key of that is when the woman makes the glass product, she takes broken beer bottles or whatever and manufactures glasses, drinking glasses. And we then went to the retailers in Khayelitsha and said, if she provides the glass, will you purchase from her? And so what you do is you set up a network in that community where the retailers who are selling will purchase from the local providers. And in that way we've started, there's training, there's all sorts of people providing services back into the community. Now that once again is a pilot project, and we're now looking to roll that out to the different provinces. So what we as the ILO do is we create these pilot projects, we try and make them a success, and then we get the rest of the provinces to roll them out. The difficulty is getting the buy-in at provincial and local government level. We find there's a lack of project management skills there, but that's where we are prepared to bring in, at our expense, project managers to train and to hand over, like the Free State. We are not going to use any international consultants in the Free State. We are tired of the UN coming to the party, and as a South African, that's where I picked up the problem. Often donors come to South Africa with money, and I don't want to mention the countries, but they bring you money, but half of it goes back to their own country because you have to use their experts and their consultants and their service providers. And what we did with the Flemish in the Free State was we said, we'll take this project of 6 odd million euros, but the condition is that we use local consultants, local resources, and that we hand over and project manage and transfer skills from the staff that are doing it to the local government staff. So it's a huge benefit. So I hope I've answered all the questions. If there's any more, I'll be glad to do so. But we are certainly open to providing information on a regular basis to this committee.
Thank you very much for the response. On a different aspect, the question of the decent job and, of course, the issue of unemployment, question of lack of skills, question of recession, all these things. I heard you that South Africa, in terms of NetLag, in terms of CMA, we are actually models for the world, which is pleasing to hear. Are there no other models that you can share with us so that at least we can turn around the tide around the issue of unemployment, around the issue of providing jobs in South Africa, as well, of course, to create employment opportunity for our people?
Thank you, Honourable Mr. Nkanyani. I think what we've got at NEDLAC is we've got the National Framework Agreement, we've got many agreements, but the difficulty we find is taking it from concept form to implementation. And so we've got so many examples in South Africa. The National Framework Agreement was one of the first responses in the world to the global crisis. But we're 2 years down the line, and all of those good things that have been put into that National Framework Agreement, hardly any have been implemented. And so when you go to the ILO, you will see the National Framework Agreement has been put up as one of the best examples of how to respond to a global crisis. And yet the committee that's managing that and following through on it, many areas haven't been exhausted. Tourism, for example, has been identified as one of the key industries, particularly in the rural areas, as to how we can grow employment and mainstream and grow the economy. But when I met with the Department of Tourism the other day and I looked at some of the objectives that have been set out, there's very little that has been implemented. So we are actually looking at tourism as an example of setting up its own decent work agenda and how we can roll out and create jobs. But I don't think that the parties at the macro level in the private sector, and I come from there, are serious enough about creating jobs. I think it's not like the other countries where you've got unemployment going from 3% to 5% or 6%. We're talking of 27%, and it's a time bomb we're sitting on. If we don't deal with that, all the good things that we've done could be undone very quickly.
Thank you very much. Just wish to thank you for your time and your patience. And please don't feel offended by the fact that there are few members. Yes, there are a number of responsibilities that they had to attend to, as I said. And thank you very much. I've drafted two letters to the incoming minister and to the outgoing minister as the committee. So I just want to read it to you, to the Honorable Ladan. So if there are things that you need to be added, please do that. Honorable Ladan, on behalf of the Portfolio Committee on Labour, we wish to thank you for the work you have done whilst acting as an accounting executive to the Department of Officer to the Department of Labour. The African National Congress has trusted you with this colossal role and responsibility for more than a decade. We remain indebted to your honest efforts to resurrect service delivery within the Department of Labour. As a leader in the provincial task team in the Western Cape, we also hope that you will continue to offer your proposals and opinions by means of your influences, wisdoms and experiences to this committee. In conclusion, we wish to thank you and bid your farewell as the outgoing Minister of Labour and wish you the very best both within your public and private profile. Is it fine?
Great.
Okay. Okay. Dear Minister Oliphant, congratulations on your appointment. On behalf of the Portfolio Committee on Labour, we wish to welcome your appointment as an Accounting Executive Officer to the Department of Labour. We look forward to engaging and working with you towards improving service delivery within the Department. Should you require any information from the Committee as you settle into your new post, we will be most pleased to accommodate any request you may have. In conclusion, our good working relationship would be only but beneficial towards a better life for all South Africans. May you prosper in your new profile as Minister of Labour.
Also
fine. Okay, we'll sign and send them. The meeting is adjourned.
Thank you, sir.
Thank you.
Thank you.